Welcome to the Impactful Innovators podcast series. This series is produced from the fall 2020 class at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and sponsored by the National Science Foundation and the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship at RPI. This series highlights the stories of entrepreneurs and innovators as they go through the challenging process of changing the world. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship on YouTube or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. We hope that this series will help inspire the next generation of innovators, entrepreneurs, and intrapreneurs at Rensselaer and beyond. Today's episode will feature Eben Bayer, class of 2007, and is a well-known alumnus who got his start in a design studio course taught by the late professor Bert Swirsey. It was Swirsey who convinced Eben that he had something special and needed to build the company. Eben and co-founder Gavin McIntyre, also from the class of 2007, have taken a little-known structure called mycelium and introduced it to the world in multiple new forms, including packaging material, skincare, and most recently, plant-based meat.
I'm thrilled to get to speak with everyone here. I started right where all of you are today. So today what I'd like to do is give you a brief background on Ecovative. I'll tell you a little bit about the problems we're addressing, why we're doing this, the work we do, the kind of journey I took to get where I am today. And along the way, I just want to share a couple of lessons on entrepreneurship that I found really helpful. For those of you considering becoming entrepreneurs or doing this, I highly encourage you to do it. For those of you that want to work on real problems that affect the world, I highly, highly encourage you to do it. It's really hard work, but it's also really rewarding, and you can make a difference, and it's happening all the time, and we need more people doing it. Let's just start with the problem statement. You know, you've got a big life ahead of all of you, and you should think about how you want to spend your time on this blue orb we all live on. I like what Buckminster Fuller calls it, Spaceship Earth, because it really puts into context to me the fragility of this beautiful ecosystem we're traveling on. And it also, if I think of Earth as a spaceship with self-repairing systems like our ecosystems that keep us healthy, make oxygen, make water, make all the materials we need to live, it also helps put into perspective like how important it is to kind of take care of our spaceship, because we are rocketing through a very cold, very large, very big galaxy. Let's start with history. Like, how do we get to where we are today? Technology has been moving really fast. So humans have been around for about 100,000 years. Past 2,000 years have been like really fast in terms of social, government, political evolution. In the past 100, it's been astronomical in terms of technology. This has touched a lot of domains, from information technology to the material world. I'm going to focus on the material world today. And the 1950s were really powerful. They were a time of optimism, time of uplift. They started some of the big projects of going to the moon. Also brought us some incredible materials like nylon and rayon and styrofoam. All of these were developed during this period. And they absolutely transformed the way we lived and were basically viewed as how we should be in the future. And it was a massive move away from the natural world. These technologies are incredible. Plastic's really important. It's very important in many applications throughout our lives. But many of these chemical innovations, material innovations, came with tremendous environmental costs. I'm sure all aware of this, whether it's the news you see around plastic collecting in our oceans, or just like go for a walk in Troy and look at the park. Look at the styrofoam or the plastic you'll see in the park. And so even if we work really hard as humans to collect recyclable plastics, for instance, they still end up in our ecosystem. And so while this technology has been tremendously impactful in a positive manner, it's changed how we live. It's also created this incredible cost for our planet that we really haven't captured in the past. Arthur C. Clarke has a quote that I really love. And he said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. You know, he was a visionary. He wrote in the 60s and he wrote about things like geopositioning satellites, right? That we're going to fucking launch satellites into space, and they're going to tell you where you are on planet Earth using the time dilation of a light beam reaching you or an electron beam reaching you, right? He was talking about the iPhone when he wrote these quotes. And he was right. These are incredible technologies that have changed our life. We can do things that were unimaginable 100 years ago. If you look at this table, and I've borrowed this graphic from Jason Kelly of Ginkgo Bioworks, one of the leaders in the bioengineering space, and you think, what's the most impressive piece of technology on this table? Well, you might not gravitate towards the computer anymore. It looks like it's a little, one of those thicker, older MacBooks. But, you know, you've got camera, you've got headphones, you've got iPhones. It's the plant, right? The plant is the thing on the table that's the most impressive piece of technology. It's literally molecular nanotechnology. It's taking photons, these little ethereal packets of light, it's turning them into a material on your desk. If you take a little sprig of it and put it in water, it'll start growing again. Like, it beats the computer hands down. And this is the key insight for me when starting Ecovative and many people in the sector, which is biology will be the general purpose technology for the next 100 years. And by working with biology, we can both create incredible new materials or even living objects without the environmental consequences that came from the way we introduced plastics to the material world. So in many ways, it's both returning to the old way, working with nature, but also insight we've learned over the years, you're able to unlock what I think of as like alien technology. Like, natural technology is just like this incredible thing that's around us that we can actually utilize. So from my view, I like to riff on Arthur C. Clarke. I hope he'd like this. I think he would if he was still here today, and say any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from nature. So I want to give you a little history around the start of Ecovative. I give this talk periodically externally. I rarely actually have the opportunity to give it to folks who are at RPI, and I'm happy to do so because the story actually does go all the way back to RPI, and it goes back to the Change the World competition and an incredible professor in my life. Let me start here. This was right when we were getting going, 2006, 2007. This is a photo that was taken for Popular Science, and it shows Gavin and I in the lab with these raw materials. And in some ways, I think this is what the picture of success looks like right at this early stage. Like, this looks sciencey. I'm wearing a bouffant. Like, we've got cool stuff growing in trays. But what I wanted to share in this class is, like, this is the reality. We graduated from RPI. We rented a 200-square-foot office in the business incubator. Just business incubators for like people doing stuff on laptops. We're like cooking up ag waste and other smelly things in the basement, going up to the shared kitchen to get water for our science experiments. And like, we need more space. We don't have any money. And one day Gavin's like, hey, this closet door, like, it seems to go to a really big empty space at the bottom of the basement, the business incubator at RPI. And we like both looked at each other. We're like, should we ask if we can rent it? And we're like, we don't have the money. And we're like, you know what? We're just going to clean it up. So this is me cleaning this whole space up. This is that picture you was taken right to the right of me in the old darkroom. So this was actually the old RPI darkroom, which we converted into a wet lab. But the punchline here is like, our place was a mess. Like, we're wearing bouffants in that picture, but we never wore bouffants. Like, we're looking all sciencey, but we really didn't know what was going on. And then we did really need this space, and we put it to work. We cleaned it out. We wanted, at the time we were building a building insulation, we needed to dry large panels of insulation. And so we built a giant oven down here. We used hair dryers that we got from Walmart, $10 a piece, plugged into all these different outlets in the basement to like dry these panels. The fire alarms kept going off. We kept telling people it was popcorn burning in our microwave. Finally, the fire department came in January. The entire incubator was evacuated, and it's all the other companies like looking at us very angrily. And the administration finally figured out not only had we like squatted in the basement of the business incubator, we built some like things you probably shouldn't have put in place. So why am I telling you all this? Because I think if we had not taken these steps, Ecovative would not be here today. We were at like a really critical, scrappy juncture in our scale-up growth, and these are steps we needed to do. And the first lesson I want to share with you is ask forgiveness. Don't ask permission as an entrepreneur. Ultimately, with some major changes in safety, we were able to lease the space, we were able to pay the school to use the space, and we were able to keep that lab space. And this pilot space was critical for the next journey in Ecovative's story. So, you know, you don't want to be outrageously dangerous. You don't want to create human health risks. Like, we should never play with people's lives. If you have a good reason, right, you are working on something important in the world, to bend or break some of these rules, think about it in this context. At the time, we were developing a building insulation. We thought that would be the highest good for this technology. And we were really struggling with funding. And we had the opportunity to participate in a conference, the Green Challenge in the Netherlands. This is a really rare event. It's still going on. For those of you that are interested in the future, it's a great way to fund your business. And we flew to the Netherlands. We couldn't believe it. These Dutch people called us up after we applied for it. They said, you know, you're a finalist. Come and present. And we were living on $25,000 a year investment and eating ramen. And so this is like a massive step change for us in potential capital. We went, we presented, we did not think we were going to win, right? Like, I stood on stage and I promised this Dutch foundation that we were going to put mushroom insulations in everyone's walls. It was going to save CO2. We were going to scale up a production process, showing those like pictures of the business incubator to make it look like we had a bigger space than we had. And like, unbelievably, like truly unbelievably, we won this competition. And they just give you a €500,000 check. Like, they're like, okay, go do it. You know, keep us reported. We want reports every quarter, but go do it. And so these are the three co-founders, Ed Broca, Gavin McIntyre on the side, and then me in the middle. And, you know, Gavin looks really happy, right? He's got a big smile on his face. But you can see my gears have already shifted. If you could really zoom into my eyes here, you would just see I'm in total abject fear. Because I've already moved from like the, oh my God, we won, to like, holy crap, like we got to build a mushroom insulation factory. Like they gave us the money to do it. We said we'd do it. Like, how are we going to freaking do this? And so it was this mix of, you know, be careful what you wish for. And again, this is all around a building insulation. So what do? We return to the United States. We get off the plane. It's really great. People are calling us, congratulating us. And a few weeks later, I get a call from a casting director saying, I'm trying to make this building insulation for a TV. And I'll just show you the result. Hopefully this plays and everyone can hear it. I'll tell you the backstory here. So this is a clip from CSI. I'm sorry the audio didn't play for the group. And this is basically them describing how mycelium insulation produced by Ecovative solves the crime. This aired on national television. Like, you couldn't ask for better earned advertising for, right? And this was kind of like crazy because now people are, we've got this capital to build a mushroom insulation factory. For some reason, people are calling us being like, hey, I want to put mushroom insulation in my attic. My grandmother's cold, you know? We're like, oh, great, customer discovery, like product market fit. And with all this like momentum, I promised the Dutch people I'm going to build a mushroom insulation factory. I've got this ad running on national television about mushroom insulation. What do you think we did? Change direction. It's called a pivot, right? In Silicon Valley, it's called a pivot. But there's a, you know, there's a real reason, which is we realized, okay, building insulation is a good idea. There's a real market product fit here, product market fit here, but it's really hard. There's regulations. It's defined as a very high volume, low margin industry. We're like a scrappy little startup. Like, we got to get a product out into the world. Like, we got to show some traction around this science experiment. And so we dug deep. We're like, what are we trying to do in the world? Like, why do we pick insulation? Energy efficiency for building, reducing CO2 emissions, the pollution associated with construction. Like, these were all our motivators in replacing styrofoam. And we changed our thinking. We said, where else is styrofoam a problem? And that brought us to protective packaging, which was the total opposite. It's a small product. It's got fast product life cycles and compostability, which is a key element of a natural material like mycelium materials, was a value proposition in this space. And we could make 100 of them in the basement of the business incubator and start selling them, which is what we did. And so we ended up pivoting from building insulation and launched mushroom packaging 2010 and acquired our first customers like Steelcase and Dell after that. And I had to call up those wonderful Dutch people and say, please send the money. I'm so sorry, we're doing something different. And they listened to me and they listened to the reasons and they wired the money. And that is how we kind of got our first leg up. This would be a good time now to describe a little bit about what we're doing here. So we're using mycelium to both synthesize small compounds. We've done with biological fermentation since the 1970s, making insulin in yeast. Now we make lots of different biological compounds and chemical compounds in cells. What nature does really well, though, is both synthesize small molecules and assemble them into structures. So this is why wood is such a great biomaterial. This is why ivory is such a great biomaterial. This is why leather is such a coveted biomaterial. And so mycelium really puts both of these things together. And this time lapse you're seeing is exactly that. You're seeing these mycelial fibers start as pinpricks that are almost too small to see with the naked eye, and grow through and around a mixture of low-cost ag material like wood chips to glue them together. It both like digests them and glues them. And so this is the core basis we use to make our packaging and many of our composite materials. So the lesson from all that is, if you get new data, our data in this case was like, insulation is gonna kill us. We're not gonna make progress on that. It's not a market we're gonna be able to address with testing, scale up, access to capital, et cetera. Pick a new direction. Pick a new direction even if someone gave you $500,000 check to go in that direction. Pick a new direction if you've got a free infomercial running on national TV, right? It's not important about how you got there. What's important is the decision you take in the moment for your future. You only control what happens to you next. You have no control of how you got to where you were at this moment, right? So you always want to be taking new decisions and paying attention to the data in front of you. So then, what do we do after we won?
We're at Ecovative headquarters. We've been running for 36 minutes and 12 seconds. This is the first trial run of our manufacturing system. Jason, pan up there. Let's get that auger going right there. What we've got here is a fully continuous process. We're taking cotton gin trash. We're moving it up to our blancher. Our blancher is then continuously pasteurizing it on a 30-minute cycle where it's falling into our tray filler. We've got our trays being UV'd and sterilized, filled, and liquid inoculated. We are transforming cotton waste into green silate in just 20 minutes.
I wanted to share that because even though we pivoted, we were making packaging in that space, we built it. You know, we told those folks we were going to build a mushroom factory, and we did. And I was super proud of that. I think it's really important in the world of physicality to actually build these things and make it. So that line I just showed you is like super primitive. It worked. We shipped product from that line to our first customers. We shipped a Steelcase in Dallas. It proved out a lot of our key hypotheses about the process, but it was made out of scrap. Like the thing that was making the steam was an asparagus blancher we got for $10,000 out of a food factory. The steam generator was from some like backyard shop in Alabama. You could probably tell that the hopper holding the ag waste was plywood and duct tape, and the auger is just sitting on a concrete floor. Like none of these are things you should do to build a manufacturing facility, but getting the whole prototype out there, that was what allowed us to go from, you know, $500,000 raising $13 or $14 million to build a business. Lesson three is just build it. And I would also put this in the context of prototyping. Often when you have an idea, you're like, oh, I have this great idea. I'd love to like make it, but I don't have any of the parts to make it. Like maybe it's got a microprocessor in it. And one of the things I learned at RPI and I still practice in my life is, well, for make a paper prototype of it, making a new kind of app, just draw a picture of it on a piece of paper and hand it to someone and see how they use it. You know, make it out of a cardboard box next, make it 3D, you know, put some Play-Doh on it, you know, to show where where the user might grab it. Like it's okay if it's really horrible, because the hard part is actually starting that design innovation loop. Once you start building something, you can improve on it. You can see the problems, you can see the opportunities, and you can go from there. And this is really important too. All the things I'm describing were really hard. That moment at Ecovative's life was critical. You know, we had like 7 or 8 employees, huge pressure from customers. You know, $500,000 sounds like a lot of money, but like when you're paying 7 or 8 people and you've rented a warehouse with a 7-year lease, like, you know, time was on. We had a very limited amount of time. And I love that video, which I had to go way into the archives to find, because everyone was having a blast. You know, we were all working 12 or 18 hours a day, but it was like the best thing we were doing. And it was that energy that got us over the line as well. If we didn't have that energy, you know, you wouldn't have made it. And you can't have that energy if you don't legitimately have fun. And I'll tell you, there's no reason not to have fun in what you do. It's just, you literally produce a better work product for it to be required. I'll tell you a little bit more about the Mycelium biofabrication platform, which is how we describe what we do. And then I'd love to see if there's any questions from the group. Over the years, we've used this technology to make massive structures. We grew a 40-foot tall tower in Brooklyn for a group called The Living. We made all these bricks in Troy, New York. And this architect had this vision of building this 40-foot tower, which is a cool music and art space, which was a great demonstration of like, how big can you go as an architectural element? We've created design and interior objects through our Grow program. So this allows artists and designers to get a bag of dehydrated material. If you want one, you can buy one online, grow.bio. You add water and you can grow an object. So making lampshades is not a huge business for us, but Daniel Trophy, a very talented artist in Brooklyn, built a business around creating these. Her work showed up in Hotel Brooklyn and other both hotels and people's homes. And I have these at home. They're lovely. Over the past 5 years, we've been pushing the limits of what you can do with mycelium. So making squishy foams, leather-like textiles. This is a leather we developed and licensed, very much like the skin of an animal. And most recently, we've really been focusing in on food. In a couple of weeks, you'll be able to buy our plant-based bacon in Albany, New York, from our subco, Atlas Food Co. I want to talk a little bit about food and leather, because most of what you've probably heard about Ecovative is around plastics replacement. We broadened our mission a few years ago to include reducing plastic pollution and reducing animal slaughter. Reason for that is twofold. One, mycelium is uniquely suited for replacing animal materials. So like we can make the best non-animal based skin in the world right now. We can make the best non-animal plant-based meat in the world right now. But two, animals are really hard on the planet. I grew up farming in central Vermont. I raised pigs. I slaughtered pigs for 15 years. I raised cows. I raised chickens. It was a small crop farm. It was beautiful. Doing this was a cultural way of life, and it was net productive for that area, right? There wasn't a higher purpose for that land. But factory farming is horrible, and I had a real blind spot to the amount of CO2 emissions, methane emissions, particularly as it relates to cows, as well as things like nitrogen escaping into the ocean that really mess up our ecosystem. And so, again, there's a business reason, technical business reason, like we can make something no one else can make better, and we can do it in a space where by doing so, we can have the biggest lever to impact positivity for the planet. And so that's kind of why we're in food right now. You know, I love this as an example, again, on prototyping. So this photo I showed 2 years ago, December 5th of this year, this will be 2 years ago, the first I publicly showed this image. This is a prototype of bacon. So in a couple of weeks, you'll be able to buy this bacon at Honest Weight in Albany. I hope you do. I hope you love it. For everything we understand, this is literally the best plant-based bacon in the world. It's eerily like a pork-based bacon. But this picture I'm showing you looked really good, but was horrible. So I stood on stage, I announced to the world we're going to make plant-based bacon. I'd eaten the bacon. We used our leather strain, right? So you couldn't chew the stuff when you were done. But it was like, yeah, that's the idea. Like, rather than using a leathery mushroom to make leather, we're going to use a meaty mushroom to make bacon. Like, that's the prototype, right? And so we made the prototype, we fried it up, we all ate it, it sucked. And then we used the visual to help the audience understand, like, oh, I get it. Like, they're going to make bacon. And so it took 2 years from sharing this prototype that didn't even work as bacon to get that bacon on the shelf, which is actually like really, really fast. But if I hadn't shared a prototype and made a prototype, it either never would have happened or would have taken way, way longer. So just like big picture, we spent the last 10, 13 years now partnering and trying to make materials that make the planet a better place, trying to use biology as technology to enable that as a fundamental driver, and ultimately get to as much scale as we possibly can to drive the impact. I have one last lesson I want to share though. And this one's, I think, probably the most important for everyone to hear. It's simple. Everyone around you is struggling. It's your peers, it may be your parents, it may be your siblings, it may be your professors. But I think it's really important, especially with what's going on in the world today, that you remember this. And for those of you that consider becoming entrepreneurs, and particularly if you're going to devote your life to working on one of these hard problems, so you're not going to make email faster, you're not going to make it easier to set up a calendar invite, you're not going to incrementally improve the audio quality of this Zoom chat. If you choose this path, you're going to do something really hard. It's also really important to the world. And it's really important we get as many people as possible working in these dimensions. The last part of this story for me is I wouldn't be speaking to you today if I hadn't started on this path. And I wouldn't be speaking to you today if I didn't have a professor in my life, Bert Swerzy, who really, I'll be honest with you, like pushed me into this path, like both showed me what was possible in terms of invention and also was really just like brutally honest about the problems facing the world. Like, we've come a long way, but there are very real issues that we as a society have to contend to. We need people to go in this direction and do it. And so Bert Swerzy's belief was you could use invention and innovation to improve the state of the world. And his approach to doing that was to get as many students as possible working in this domain and creating companies. So he didn't say, I'm going to go do this. He said, I'm too old to do that. I'm going to get as many people as possible doing that. And my hope is to continue to see that happening. I know by virtue of being in this class and listening today, it must be of interest with you. And I just want to encourage all of you to consider on this path, acknowledge that it will be really hard. Acknowledge that when you do this, you'll have all these folks around you still struggling, but also know that it's really important to the world. For those of you that are thinking of going that direction or maybe opening your mind to it, or those of you who already feel committed, I just want to say thank you. And I think we'll wrap there. I'm happy to answer any questions.
One of the questions we've been trying to ask all of the speakers or presenters is, if you were a freshman at Rensselaer today, you know, what would motivate you? Is it the same types of things when you were here? Or is there anything that's changed in the world that would change your perspective on what you'd be working on?
So I think not a lot would have changed for me in the sense that I still believe biological technology is the greatest vector of the next 100 years. And I think the last 13 years, I think, are bearing that out. And I would say we're still at the beginning. So like, if you compare this to computers, like maybe I graduated in 1970 and it's like 1983 and we're still waiting for like the Macintosh to show up on the scene, right? So like, I guess I would just preface it with like, the opportunity is still really, is wide open, like it's gonna be wide open for a long time. I think plastics and animal pollution, animals are still like two of the biggest problems facing the earth. And then, of course, like what we're seeing with COVID and the sort of societal shifts that go around with that. So not just like dealing with filtration, like a practical element of the problem. There's just like a lot of change in the world. And so I would look at where the opportunities and the problems are in everything. We're going to have a rearrangement of society and economies and geopolitical powers effectively. So like, you know, as students and as people in your age group, like you're plugged in. You actually know what the future will look like if you listen to your peers and what you see. And so like, I would just, in addition to those problems in this technology vector, like listen to that.
I wanted to give you another round of applause if everyone could. It was a great story. Love to have you back at some point in the future to keep telling this. I think it's one of those ones that we have to kind of nurture and curate at Rensselaer, make sure that the next generation keeps hearing it, that innovation in the classroom and the way that Bert was able to, you know, motivate lots of students to try out entrepreneurship was really amazing. We try to take up that mantle and try to try to push it forward. But, you know, there weren't many people who did it better than Bert. Bert was just an amazing guy.
He was one of a kind for sure. I will say I'm getting old. You know, I got gray hairs in my beard. So I'm looking at you. It's up to you guys. I don't want to be giving this talk in 5 years. One of you should be doing it. I will definitely give this talk in 5 years if it's helpful. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Impactful Innovators podcast series. Be sure to continue listening as we explore more of the stories of entrepreneurs and innovators as they go through the challenging process of changing the world. Thank you again to the National Science Foundation and the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship for making this podcast possible. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship on YouTube, share it with a friend, or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. We hope that this series will help inspire the next generation of innovators, entrepreneurs, intrapreneurs at Rensselaer and beyond.